It's Friday, 22nd of October. Welcome to episode 66 of Digital Outbox. Hello, good evening, and I'm almost going to say welcome. I've already said it's episode 66, but I'm tired and I'm going to forget things. My name's Ian. Joining me again is Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hello, I am here to help you along the way.
Oh, I need help.
You sounded excited when you said episode 66. I thought we were going to get a sound effect or something.
That's the peak. That's the peak of this whole podcast. So see?
That's the last bit of your sprightliness for this week.
It's gone. It's gone. The week's taken out of me.
It is Friday at 8 o'clock and you've just got off a plane and I'm knackered anyway.
Yeah, I was in London all week on a training course and foolishly said, yeah, Friday night's great for podcasting.
Friday night's fun night, yes.
So not only am I tired, I know nothing about what we're going to talk about.
And as I never know anything about things anyway, this is going to be blind leading the blind.
Let's crack on.
Let's do it.
Google profits. So seemingly Google made some profit.
Yes, although this wasn't my story.
Oh, damn, it was. Right. There's a fatal flaw in this. I'll just read it out then. Basically, they made $7.3 billion. That was a revenue. Net income was up 18% to $2.2 billion. And what I just don't get is they were talking before they announced, like, oh, Google probably, they're just ticking along and, you know, there's not going to be any great things. It's like, what?
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of the things they've been announcing haven't gone down that well or whatever. But the thing is, I think the things we hear about are nothing to do with their core business, basically, are they?
No.
So they're just like a money machine who tinkers and plays with things like self-driving cars.
but yet again, I've put in a graphic to help us, not the listener. But if you can imagine a Pac-Man, 95% of Google's profit is from search.
Yeah, so you know, and that happens no matter what they do. And in fact, everything they do obviously ties into that. So it's not surprising their profits are going up. But, you know, they've ended the quarter with $33.4 billion in cash. It's just ridiculous amounts of money. It's just unbelievable. I can't fathom that much money.
And I guess one little interesting bit, they split down into some detail, which they've not really done before. They talked about display advertising and, you know, each year $2.5 billion in display advertising, which is just like phenomenal.
And how much are, third world debts? Could they be wiped out?
YouTube, they didn't talk about revenue from it, but it's monetizing 2 billion views per week.
So they're still being really cagey about YouTube, aren't they? They don't really want to let everyone know if they're losing money or not, I guess. But I can't believe they are losing money when...
Oh, I think they might still be.
So you reckon it costs more than £1 billion a year to run it?
Yeah. Wow. No, there's all these crazy... I just have in my head all these crazy stats about how many... Was it 24 hours every 5 minutes of video or every minute or every second? I can't remember. It's something like... It's like mind-blowing. Gets uploaded. And you just think for all that to be uploaded and then available and then them doing all their searches against it and doing all their, you know, searching the video for, you know, music that you can't play and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that all happens really quickly.
Yes.
You know, so it's just...
Their infrastructure's
like
big. Obviously, well, massive. But isn't it a case that once you've got that infrastructure and actually you don't really have any bandwidth costs after that? That, you know, suddenly what we imagine to be the costs is effectively their server farms and stuff.
Maybe. It's just one of these things that just... I just think it's an awful lot. I think because it's not the same as like Flickr hosting an image. You know, some of these files are big, and they're obviously moving into.
Well, not some of them. All of them are big, aren't they? It doesn't really matter what video is; it's still big.
Yeah, but I mean, some of the videos are maybe only like, you know, they're only like, I don't know, 20 seconds long, and they might, by the time you compress it, it might only be.
They store all the originals, and that's how they can do high def content now. Yeah. So they actually store the original as well as the four different versions.
That is very true.
So it's
that
a multiplication.
So, yeah, that was a nice set of profits from Mr. Google.
Yes, and so and they're also moving into the mobile market quite heavily now, aren't they? They're looking to move that one into $1 billion business as well. I know, it's just, you know, like I say, their little toys and their play games are worth more money than countries have.
I know, I know. But those pesky Canadians.
Yes.
Google are in breach of privacy.
Yeah, so basically the Canada have come out and said that Google were in breach when they I mean, pretty much their Google Map cars stole Wi-Fi data from all over the place. It wasn't just the UK. In fact, it was all around everywhere, anywhere the cars went. So the Canadians have come up and said that, yes, you've been in breach of our privacy rules. I don't think anything's been said about whether there's going to be any ramifications of that. I assume there would be. But there seems to be a bit of a backlash generally. I mean, the Germans aren't very happy with them.
Germans are never happy. There's a German in my course this week, and he wasn't very happy.
Was he very efficient?
No, but he did kind of make decisions for the whole group.
Right.
Which did kind of sum up their race. not that I want to dwell on it. No. I did want to hand him a towel at one point that he was making so many decisions for us all.
Have the sunbed.
I have to digress. The room was the hottest room in the world. On the 27th floor in some building in London, it's hot as hell, there's a fan on, and Mr. German decides, no, too much, I can't stand the noise. So we all had to sit and sweat.
Is it saying something for the UK mentality that everyone went, moaned and grumbled but didn't do anything?
Well, I call him a Nazi. It didn't go down very well, but there you go.
Ouch.
Anyway.
So yes, 3% of Germans are apparently having all their house and households blurred.
Yeah,
on the Google Maps, like, it makes the blind a bit difference, really. But anyway,
I don't get that. People can just walk by it and see it.
We do not want people on the internet seeing
the Germans.
Yeah, to just. So anyway, so there's maybe sort of there's backlashes, and there's still grumblings in other countries as well. So we might not have heard the last of it. It'd be interesting to see if Canada do anything.
At the end of the day, I guess the good thing is at least I've got the option to do it. You know, so they can go online and take their house out of it if they want.
And I think that's going to be the future of it, you know, just of all these kind of things. It's the option to go and have yourself removed or whatever. But,
although it would be interesting if it was an opt-in thing.
Well, and that's the way consumers want it. But yeah. I don't think, say, from the direction that Facebook goes and all those kind of things, I think it's going
to
be the other way.
It's most of these big companies, because they know if they said, oh, well, if you want your house to appear on this map, then tick a box.
Opt-in, probably get, you know, 100,000 houses shown. Opt-out, you probably have 10,000 removed.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't think Facebook did anything when Canada moaned at them, did they? So they said something like, we'll have it done in 7 years.
I think their actual quote was, those damn pesky Canadians.
Yeah, damn pesky Canadians.
Moving closer to home, the plan to store our, and when I say our, I mean Britain's phone and internet data, has been revived.
So this is Secret Service stuff, isn't it?
Oh,
they've been given an extra £1 billion or something.
Yep, so it's been a fairly big week, as we all know, for government announcements. And the Strategic Defence and Security Review was published on Tuesday. Now, one of the things that's come out, and it was hidden in detail, and I guess a lot of the stuff that's been announced this week is all hidden in detail. We're not going to find out, you know, some of the ramifications for a while yet. But the old Labour government had a programme. It was the Interception Modernisation Programme. and that would basically require ISPs to retain data about how people like you and me have used the internet. And for the phone networks, they would have to record details about every phone call. And at the time, it was for an unspecified period. So obviously, ISPs and phone companies are a bit like, well, hold on, this is a massive cost for us. And also, that it was, I think they were concerned because it was turning them into almost like policemen.
Yes, they were worried that it was actually them having to report on people as well, wasn't it?
Yes. Now, the Lib Dems did make a pledge ahead of the election or before the election to say that we're against this and it won't happen.
There were lots of pledges. There were lots of pledges.
I'm sure if you're a student or a Guardian reader right now and you voted Lib Dems, you might feel kind of foolish.
Yes.
Anyway, that's now been revived.
So it is back from the dead.
Yes. So it looks like ISPs and telcos will be forced into storing all this data. And police and security services will be able to access that data if they, now I think this is a bit that confuses me, if they can demonstrate it is to prevent a terror-related crime.
But they seem to be able to say that on pretty much anything, though. If someone looks at a bin wrong nowadays, they can be accused of being a terrorist.
Yep. So I think this is going to open up an absolute can of worms. You're going to find people being investigated, you know, just because somebody thinks, oh, terror-related, I can get their data.
Well, I think people investigate without their knowledge anyway, aren't they? But yeah, this is almost making it, it's almost like the data, it's not like they have to be under investigation and then they go and get the data or ongoing. It's almost like if they want to, they can go and find the past, you know, communications or whatever of anyone they like, or that's what it seems, if they're asking to be stored for an unspecified length of time. It's like, you know, it's the trail rather than, it's not something being turned on and then having looked at. It's the trail that it's left over, you know, however long it'll be, a year's worth of data. There was an awful lot to store for everyone.
It's a horrendous amount of data. I mean, if you think every phone call sounds a lot, but everything you do on the internet as well is a massive amount. Massive amount. But then I was talking to somebody through the week about it, and they did give me the old, if you're doing nothing wrong, what is it to be worried about?
But it's fine as long as what you'll consider to be nothing wrong is what everyone else considers what to be nothing wrong, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, a bit of me feels that whole, if a website you visited 6 months ago was fine, but then that content's now changed.
Yeah, I did.
You know, that whole, you know, if I was just say I visit your blog, and it's fine at the time, but then you start posting some terror-related information.
Yeah, so it's shown as a link that you've gone to the,
yeah,
you know, my blog, and there is now, yeah, you're associated with that content, yeah, even though it, you know, you and really
how are they going to be that clever?
Well, but this is what we don't know. It's all speculation, being worried about it. It just seems like the whole concept of it is very much a, you know, collect everyone's data. It's sort of guilty before being proven.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, I'd say if they've got an extra like billion, whatever it is, you know, is that going to be even enough to sort of support this kind of thing? Who knows? I think it'd probably disappear again.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so.
No.
I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's it. Moving on to Apple, our favourite topic.
It's, yeah, well, they've also been reporting big profits.
Yes. So, for the last quarter, and I have to remind myself just how short a term it is.
Yeah,
the last
quarter. Is a quarter of a year.
3 months, $20.3 billion in revenue and $4.5 billion in profit.
Bonkers.
Just a year ago, it was $12.21 billion and a profit of $2.53, and everybody was like going, woohoo.
Again, like these numbers are baffling me, and again, I think
I thought the world was in a recession. This is what I don't get. The world's in a recession, and you've got to be honest. People look at Apple stuff and say it's either dear or a lot of the stuff's unnecessary. So who the heck's buying all this apart from me and you?
Yeah, no, and I'm exactly the same. We seem to be what yesteryear was considered to be luxuries, I think, are now considered to be, you know, almost essentials. I guess it must be that.
Yeah. If you look at the numbers, I mean, it's like almost 4 million Macs. And that's not including iPads. That's just Macs. The one that's doing 14.1 million iPhones. So much for Antennagate and all that nonsense.
Yeah, is it?
14.1 million iPhones in 3 months. 9 million iPods and 4 million iPads.
Yeah, they don't make so much money on the iPads, do they? It's quite an expensive bit of kit for them to produce.
Yeah.
So I think rather than they're kind of 30% clear, they only get about 10-15 or something.
I think we've seen from the Samsung that's come out that they couldn't really price that under the iPad.
No, it's come in roughly the same, hasn't it?
Everybody thought iPad was expensive, and it's obviously not.
No, I think it's a very expensive thing to make. I think that's more the point.
Yeah.
You have to sell that many of them to make it kind of viable, I guess. Although, yeah, you know, I'm sure they've made gazillions out of that as well, or will do.
Oh, no, I still think they've got that market sewn up for the next sort of 3-6 months.
At least, if not longer.
Nothing really is coming out to be like that challenger.
No, I think in 12 months, I don't know when the BlackBerry's out.
Well, BlackBerry.
It's a while off.
Yeah, we never really touched on the BlackBerry again. From there was a picture and people touched it, but it seemed like it was all vaporware. It seemed like it was all just a prototype.
Yes, there's no hardware out there that's actually running this.
There's no hardware. There's no OS. There's nothing that a developer can download. It's just all talk.
Yes.
And from what I read afterwards, pre-Christmas talk. Don't go and buy that.
Okay, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think to enterprises as well, don't commit to iPads. We're coming along. We're tied in with all your infrastructure. But there's nothing there.
I don't think they were that close about that. I think they were quite honest about that, actually. There was nothing to touch and hold at the moment. Still.
So, yeah, 14 million iPhones, which is 2 million more than RIM, so BlackBerrys, which is
a big turnaround.
But I still think that it might be just this quarter because iPhone was new, so you are going to get a lot of people buying it.
But the thing is that all that those 14.1 million people, you are likely most of those are now tied into a 24-month contract, at least 18 months.
Yes.
So it kind of screws over everyone else, doesn't it?
Oh no, absolutely. It's a phenomenal figure. More iPads and Macs. And there was quite a lot of talk if you actually count an iPad as a PC, which I know is very debatable.
I personally wouldn't.
No, I don't think I would either. I think it is a separate category. I think tablets are a separate thing.
Mm.
But it would give them a far bigger PC market share than is currently reported. And also what was quite interesting on the actual call, which I've not listened to because I've been away all week, but seemingly Jobs was very aggressive, which I don't think is a surprise. He is cocky. But he's been banging on about his closed versus open, saying that's a smoke screen. It's fragmented versus integrated.
But it's also closed versus open, Steve. You know.
Well, I don't
know. It's both. A lot of the other podcasts around were reporting on how why was he so defensive when you've just reported these amazing figures. What is it that you're so worried about? You know, if you're in that's a position, if you're in a massive position of strength.
I think that's his job. His job is to be offensive against anything he sees as a threat. Android's a threat.
But it makes him sound like he's got something to be worried about when actually he doesn't.
I think there's stuff that he worries about, but also I think he's the type of guy that he can't bite his tongue. He's got a point he wants to make and he will ram it home.
Yeah.
We mentioned Joe Hewitt before. I don't know if you can remember us talking about Joe Hewitt. So he was the guy that did the Facebook app, and then we got quite annoyed about the whole Apple Store thing, and at the time got a lot of press because it was a very noticeable developer saying he's had enough of developing for the iPhone and closed systems and all that kind of nonsense. So it got a lot of press, and he used to do a lot of work with Firefox, so he is very well respected, but. He's been a bit of a rant this week just about Android and open source and saying it's far from open. You know, it's just a smokescreen calling it open source.
Yeah, it's not open source in the same way as you might consider something like WordPress open source or whatever.
No.
Well, in fact, that might not be the best example. But basically, yeah, you get released a set of source code from Google that you can then go and fiddle with. And that's what's open about it is the fact that you are free to go and fiddle.
Yeah.
What's not open about it is it's still controlled from within Google.
Oh, it's controlled.
And the branch, so, you know, you don't branch inside the main code.
No, and also it's only downloadable once Google says it's downloadable.
Yes,
so they'll work in the background. I think that was I've got his quote here. Having said that, much of what I said yesterday still stands. It kills me to hear the term open watered down so much. It bothers me that so many people's first exposure to the idea of open source is an occasional code drop and not a vibrant community of collaborators like I discovered 10 years ago with Mozilla. I'm hoping that at some point it becomes practical for Google to move Android towards a Firefox model of open source because I'm sure they want to.
Yeah, and maybe they do. Leads to far, far more fragmentation, especially
exactly.
Initial direction stage. Sometimes you need, too many cooks and all that.
Yeah. Well, look at the kind of shady Android tablets that have come out, and it's just been like a really old version of Android.
Yeah.
That some. You know, manufacture in China is basically grabbed.
Well, because it takes that long to develop.
No, did you see the Next tablet that we're selling? So Next I've got 180 or 190 quid Android tablet in their store. And it is like broke. Broke on delivery. Anyway, that was Apple's record quarter.
Yep.
Fantastic. Now, there was also Back to the Mac this week.
Yes, which we would both normally, you know, I guess watch and take note of and stuff. And have you watched it?
No.
Have I watched it? No. So we're both reporting back something that, you know, based on other reports, if you like. But I can give you the headlines of what they talked about in their keynote or whatever they want to call it.
Which is probably good, and I'll chip in with what I've kind of read and some thoughts as well.
So iLife, their product suite has had an upgrade. So they're adding new bits and bobs. It's going to be new on new Macs, also free on new Macs, but it's going to be a $50 upgrade for everyone else.
Or 45 quid. I think it's 45 quid in the
UK. It's come out in the UK now. I couldn't find figures. You said iPhoto upgrade looks nice.
Yeah, no, it really does. They've slickened a lot of the things up. There's a lot better Facebook integration on it. And just some of the way you can handle your photos looks really nice. So I'll probably buy an iLife over the weekend.
They have released a FaceTime client effectively for OS X. It's going to be coming out, I think, for Snow Leopard soon. I think that's what they said.
The beta's out now.
Ah, there you go. So you can download it. So basically, you can talk to people on iPhones as long as they've got them in 3G.
And vice versa. And what it looks like as well is like if you FaceTimed me, which is about the only way I can see it, it will ring like the desktop and the phone at the same time.
So it's like a universal phone interface.
Yeah.
But it's not available for PC, so that's a big...
Well, I'm thinking one not day, yet.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Because I thought this would just be like an iChat update. So iChat's the kind of messenger app on Macs, and I just thought there would be like, there's a new version of iChat, it's now got FaceTime. But it's not, it's a separate app, a separate download, a separate icon, a separate launched thing, which makes me think that surely it will be a Windows type.
Yeah, there didn't seem to be any reason why they wouldn't do that. It seems sensible, especially if they do want to take on Skype, which they appear to want to.
And similarly, the first version had a awful security flaw, which was that you could basically see my Apple ID details, like and you could see my password and stuff.
Lovely.
So that's all now been fixed at the server end.
Good.
But no, that's a beta that's out just now. You can go to the Apple website and download the beta and get that installed. And it is 45 quid for iLife.
Right, okay. So again, a bit screwed over on that. $50, 45 quid.
Yeah, it's the same math. Every time. I know, it's the same every time.
So OS X Lion was kind of, I guess, one of the big announcements that they had. So they're just announcing their next summer's release, basically. And it's going to be a kind of fusion between their desktop and iOS.
Controversial.
Yeah, so things like there will be an app store, which we're going to come onto in a bit, actually. But they're going to they're going to have something called Mission Control, I think they called it, where basically it's almost like it's an app grid, you know, where you get your apps on your phone in a grid format. So it's going to be like you can click on them as grid. Apps can run in full screen. Basically, there's subtle tweaks everywhere, and the way they're doing folders on this launcher basically makes it look like an iPad effectively on your desktop. So quite intriguing, that side of it. But they are going to have an app store, which is probably the most controversial thing, where there will be a 70-30 split of revenues from the app store.
Yes. And I get a lot of people talked about, you know, as soon as the actual iPhone App Store came out and became the success it was, a lot of people either, you know, theoretically or just assumed it will eventually come. A lot of people, you know, discussed the would that model work on a desktop, and lots of the devs were like, no, you know, I want to be in control. I want to be the you know, the guy selling it on. And others saying to get that exposure, to be on everybody's, to potentially be in front of every Mac user. Because that's the difference, I think, the App Store makes in the iPhone. Put an app out and you have the potential to be on that new list
for a few days. Were something you had to go out to a shop to buy for your phone, it wouldn't have been half the success. Well, it wouldn't have been any of the success.
Or if you had to go and find them yourself.
Exactly.
And find the updates yourself. You know, it's the whole auto-updating nature of it.
So I don't think it's a... Right. What I don't think... I don't think the actual idea of it is bad. I think it's and it's
no,
been
the
and
concept.
It's been Linux machines, Unix machines. They've used this for donkeys.
Yep, definitely.
The whole strength of Ubuntu is the fact that you have your app store. And you can just go and pick apps, and okay, it doesn't cost you anything. That's probably where the grumbles come in.
So I guess the controversy is that, and I think the 70-30 split is something to consider, because if you're selling it yourself, it obviously is 100%, unless you might be paying some money over to, you know, you might be using some third-party, you know, financial services. So you might lose some you know, percentage on that, but you wouldn't. It's not going to be
30%. But if you put your product on Amazon, you sell it to Amazon at probably, you know, less than 30%. You know, Amazon at whack on their 30% markup for the retail rate, if not more.
But if you sell it yourself, you don't have to.
If you sell it through yourself through your own website, you're talking about that.
Yep. If you sell it yourself through your own website, you don't have to meet the Apple Store rules.
Right. But then there's nothing to say. They're not saying what people do like that now, they can't continue to do.
No, absolutely. But some of the rules are like...
Well, they're Apple-type rules, are they?
Oh, awful.
Anything which is skin-coloured, no matter if it's an icon or thing, will be banned.
You can't have an Easter egg.
What?
Apps that include undocumented hidden features, inconsistent with the description of the app, will be rejected. There's no betas, no beta trial tests.
It's going to be another one of those things where Apple. There's no way Apple are going to be able to...
To start with,
they're not going to be able to control this. And
no,
therefore, it's
keys.
Going to be an awful lot of moaning again.
No license keys, no Java, no auto run. So, like, if you want an app to auto launch, a lot of the apps I use auto launch, you know, like on startup. So, I'm looking at, you know, Tweety, Dropbox, Evernote, a whole host of them, Growl. So, they won't be allowed in the App Store. Any apps that look similar to Apple products won't be allowed.
Really?
There's no RSS readers. There's a question mark because it says apps that are simply web clippings, content aggregators, or a collection of links may be rejected.
So they're trying to make sure that it's not full up of tiny little piddly things.
Yep.
But yeah, it's going to be another one of the things. I bet they're not set up yet and I won't have the people on board to be able to... I mean, how do you dig around an app to find if it's got hidden features?
I know. And that's just where it all become. And the thing is, it's 90 days from now.
Yeah.
And I guess already this is going to be another gold rush. Flight Control have already said they're bringing their app out.
I see it being successful. I don't see it being anything other than successful.
The thing I think it's going to be odd. It's almost going to feel like two separate, you know, apps on my Mac now. I'm going to have stuff bought via the App Store. And I'm going to have the apps that I've bought, you know, traditionally.
I have to say, though, I mean, the App Store might just be good as an advertising place to be, because then, and you know, as a user, I might go and check to see whether they are cheaper on their own website.
And I did wonder, is it like, you know, on the 360 right now, I've got Xbox Live Arcade, which is one way of getting games, and I've also got the retail of going by a disc. Is that what we're going to end up with? I don't know. I just hate to think in like 5 years' time they say the only way you can put an app on a Mac is via the App Store.
Yeah,
I guess that's the fear that maybe some people have. I just can't see that ever happening because that would just kill it.
Down their PC platform, they might as well not have a personal computer type thing, you know, which is supposed to be for you to fiddle with and play
well,
with.
Well, I wasn't going to go into it, but some of the developers have came out, and some are saying they can't afford to miss it. You know, it's like an opportunity too good to miss. Others are like, well, my app won't work. You know, looking at the list that Apple have put out, my app doesn't fit in there, so I can't. And I'm obviously annoyed because I've then seen some other developers getting an absolutely win-win situation. You know, go and develop an app. If it meets the rules, you can put it in there, and it's, whoa. You know, massive exposure. And their app might be the best thing ever, but because it auto-launches, you know, it's just amazing. Can't believe that.
Yeah, it's a pretty common thing in that quarter.
Similarly, apps can't automatically add their icons to the Docker desktop. So it just looked like a very closed environment.
Yeah, well, that's obviously what Apple are liking at the moment. They like that really controlled thing. I just don't think there's a marriage. Although I think it'd be successful, there's not a marriage, I don't think, really in real terms between that platform and that operating method.
I like that kind of platform on the iOS devices because it works really well. You know, getting all the updates, it's great.
If the apps were, you know, another one of the like they've done on phones, if the apps in it were utility apps that were 59p or games that were 59p, I can see that you might not mind that those games were inside a little sort of safe little cubby hole that, you know, you can bring up a grid and just use it like you would on a...
One interest, and fair enough, the screenshots were probably mock-ups at this moment in time, but iLife's out and it's, what did I say, £45.
Yeah.
But there was some pricing, and I think iWork's £60, but there was some pricing, and it was, and I think they'd split up GarageBand and iPhoto into separate apps, individual apps you could buy.
Right.
As well as Pages and that, but they were $15.
Yes.
Yeah, and so that worried some developers because straight away it was almost Apple saying, and by the way, that's the kind of price for some of these really big apps. That's what we want to see people, you know, it was almost setting it low again.
Yeah, moving it well away from the kind of prices that you expect to pay. So I guess for a desktop piece like GarageBand, you'd expect some like 30, 50 quid minimum, really.
No, GarageBand's part of iLife. So you pick up iLife, you get iPhoto, iMovie, and GarageBand.
Plus, as a set, yeah.
You get that DVD tat as well, which I've never ever opened. But there you go.
Anyway, we will see, I guess. Because let me just, the last headline there, one more thing.
Sorry for dragging this on. I said I wouldn't. I didn't think they actually said much about Lion.
No, it didn't seem like. I mean, I don't know how much time they put to it, but no, they said that this is going to be the fusion between these two operating systems. But then the two kind of the things that they kind of highlighted are going to be out for Snow Leopard.
And the fusion stuff wasn't touch; it was gesture. Control touch, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so
it wasn't touchscreen nonsense.
No, so it's not going to be touching the screen. It's going to be just more using the trackpad, I guess.
Yeah, I might have to go and buy one.
You want the big ones?
Anyway, sorry.
So their one more thing was they've released a couple of new MacBook Airs. I say a couple because we did have one before, the 13-inch, so they've upgraded that one. But they've also released a new 11-inch. It's a unibody design, and they've gone solid state drives to make sure there's plenty of room for battery. I think the 11 inch model lasts for about 5 hours, and the 13 inch they're saying is about 7 hour battery life. Not much more to say about that. They're kind of wedge shaped. They're quite thin at the back, but they get even thinner at the front.
I think they look lovely.
I think it looks all right. It's like a Mac, isn't it?
Well, the interesting thing, I mean, I spent £700 on an iPad. £700 on an iPad, it's £850 for the 13-inch MacBook Air.
£850, yeah?
Yeah.
It's still expensive for, you know, I guess all the Apple things are, but, you know, it's their 11-inch model is effectively their netbook.
Don't tell anybody, because I'm sure Mr. Jobs stood up at the start of the year, nobody wants a netbook.
Yeah, it's a netbook by any other name other than, well, in fact it's not priced like a netbook. He said no one wants one, yeah.
Nobody wants a small screen. Nobody wants that.
Yeah. So they're not going to call it a netbook, but that's effectively what it is. But it's a blooming expensive one.
Yeah. I mean, if they come out and... the thing is, they can't come out and say it's any cheaper.
No, anyway, they can't because they with their pricing of the other things, they can't put it anywhere else.
And the other strange thing, because I'm sure the plastic MacBooks, are they not about £800 as well?
Yeah, so they're they've kind of squeezing the plastic ones out, although the plastic ones obviously got a drive and better connectivity. The MacBook Air, you know, although it's an impressive bit of kit,
two USB ports.
It's not good if it's your only machine again.
No,
because it doesn't have optical drive.
I don't know. I don't think you need an optical drive anymore.
But it doesn't have it as an option. It doesn't the connectivity of it.
But you don't need one.
You would have thought they could put more.
When was the last time you used your drive? Just out of interest.
And on the Mac, I've never shoved anything in it.
I know, and I'm the same. I just never. In fact, I tell a lie. I used it in my course this week. I used it in my PC because the guy gave us the course notes on a CD.
Yeah. So yeah, I agree. It's rare, but nevertheless, connectivity ports like FireWire and USB. I think you only get one or two of them, and it just
two
seems...
USBs. I still think it's not a. It would have to be a secondary machine, your travel machine, your use around about the house machine.
I guess like you would use a netbook.
Yeah,
pretty much. But yeah, anyway. So, but you, I certainly wouldn't want it as. I don't think it drives out that plastic netbook.
For me, it's
completely.
For me, it's a choice next year between that and an iPad 2.
I think you'll iPad to it, won't you?
Only time will tell.
Only time will tell.
Right, I've prattled on there like a fool, and I've also just remembered I'm hosting. So let's move on. Windows Phone 7's out. The queues were massive in London yesterday.
Genuinely massive? I've not heard anything about them. Or no. Jokingly massive.
No. I walked by a couple of shops and there was nothing, and I thought... I don't. Jeez, if this was iPhone 4 day, there would be like hundreds of people in the street. But then again,
I didn't even know that it had been released.
There was no press, bless them.
And why would there be when even Microsoft are sort of talking it down a little bit?
Are they?
Yeah, they're even...
Seriously?
Barmer's come out and said, you know, we know we've got a long, long way to go to be a player in this. So at least they appreciate and accept that, basically. However, reviews have been generally very good. So
yeah, no, definitely. I want to fiddle with one.
Yeah, I want to press some blocks. So basically, people are saying that the hardware they've nailed, as far as all the handsets are very responsive, and they've done a good job of making it feel really slick. So they even call it fun to use, because it is apparently it feels very different from, you know, your kind of. What we've come to used to using with Android and
they had to do something different. They couldn't just come out with the same. And in many ways, Android and iPhone, if you look at the front engine, you could use either phone straight away.
That's it. Yes.
Whereas they had to do something different.
And they're saying their difference is working. So they're saying actually the most clunky bit about the new operating system is probably the homepage tiles, because they get quite big quite quickly. As in you know, as soon as you've shoved a few tiles on there. Suddenly you're scrolling up and down a lot. But they say the secondary pages where you're scrolling into their, I can't remember what they call them, but they're different areas, so music or video or pictures, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They say they're very slick and nice to use, and certainly the videos I've seen, it does look good. They say the only drawback is possibly that it's so minimalistic in some areas that it can be hard to find options intuitively. So there's that kind of drawback, which, you know, is only a problem if you know you do want to do something and you can't find out where to do it. I think they said like deleting an email account wasn't straightforward. And they said the other one is that because it's in its infancy, you know, the app store's still looking fairly
empty. But it will do. I mean, they're not going to. I mean, I read something today that said I think they've got 1,000 apps now for day one launch. To have 1,000 apps is pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's pretty mega. But say that. The phones do live or die on the strength of their app stores. So
they do. But the first day of iPhone didn't have 1,000 apps.
And this is the point that some people have made. You know, if you look at this and compare it to the first Android phone or the first iPhone, well, it's way ahead of that. But the problem is, we haven't got just the first iPhone anymore.
No,
we're in a completely different place again. So, but I was happy in some ways to see Bomber come out and say, you know, we are behind on this, and that's good because that probably means that they'll try and ramp up their development cycle on it. I would hate to think that this release is going to have to last them a year.
No, they can't. The next one has to be out January.
They have to
get up, you know, get that curve, you know, get developing, get it out there.
A bit like Google have done with Chrome.
Yeah.
You know, really, really.
But even Google with Android, I mean, they've come out very aggressive, you know, and it was like every 3-6 months, here's another new.
Yeah, and it point releasing is fine as long as they're flexible enough that their point releases can contain quite big features, and I think that's what they have to do. So we've, as well as the Windows Phone 7, we've also had Nokia. We've had reviews of their Nokia N8.
Dead. And
pretty much gone down like a lead balloon. Not because they said the hardware is very nice. In fact, the hardware is very, very good. But the software. So this is the first release that Nokia have had their Symbian 3 operating system on.
It's been universally slated.
Yeah, every review I've read has slated it as being clunky, out of date, ugly, spews out error messages or warnings and box. They just don't rate it at all, basically.
No.
And it's no surprise, really, that Nokia are having to cut 1,800 jobs. Although
just out of interest, when was the last Nokia product you thought, yeah, I'd buy that?
I've never bought a Nokia product. I don't know whether... The thing is, in talking around as we do, we always concentrate on the smartphone market. I think it's important to understand that, you know, the phone market is not just smartphones.
No, I know, but I remember when the iPhone first came out, and was it N96 or N98 or whatever, and people were saying, oh, N95, and people were saying, oh, this is a better phone than iPhone. And I was like, it's not.
I think it was at the time, though, wasn't it?
Oh, it wasn't. It was guff.
The original iPhone didn't have anything that we know now. Oh, the original iPhone.
But when the iPhone 3G came out, I think that was just that was it.
I think that's when it took over.
Yeah, but the original one didn't have 3G. You know what I mean? That to me, that was still what killed that first phone.
Well, they didn't have an app store when it released either.
No, you know, so you couldn't have apps on it, and you could on the N95.
Yeah. So anyway, I think Nokia are rapidly falling out of this one, and who would have seen that? I mean, it's like I say, phone market is not just about smartphones, but they are the happening and kicking place to be in the phone market now, aren't they? And I think if you start losing kudos there, you start losing it across your range.
Definitely. Now, you've also got here MS Office 365.
So this is the name that Microsoft have given to their cloud-based Microsoft Office, you know, the web-based one.
So is this only working like non-leap years?
How long have you been thinking about that one?
I didn't. That's why it was so poor. But the power of the edit means I can cut that out tomorrow. No, don't know what. I won't say that either.
So this is the name that they've given to their online office suite. And it's going to be a subscription-based service. I don't know what UK pricing is because I've only seen the US one, which was for a consumer at the base product rate. We're talking about $6 a month. Enterprises, you know, they can range in packages from $2 to $20 per month for a license to use the software. I mean, we knew that this was coming out. I think it's been out in sort of beta for a while, hasn't it? I don't know what you think about the subscription-based model, whether you think it's got legs, especially because Google Docs is out there and it doesn't cost anything. Or rather, Google Apps isn't packaged.
My initial thought, I can't see anybody paying compared to Google. I don't know what is it going to offer that Google Apps doesn't offer for free?
Well, I think it's got extra features in there. I think it's a little bit more...
Right, okay. I'm seeing it now. So it's not only got the Office web apps, it's got Exchange Online, SharePoint Online.
It is the movement of them into the cloud, you know, a bit more wholesale. And in recognition and probably, in about the right time for when operating systems, I think, will start moving into the cloud much more.
No, it's probably not so bad, actually. So if you're setting up a small business and you're able to get, you know, not only your email, but your Office Online, but also that kind of SharePoint, you know, that the whole, you know, I've got my little internet on the go with all my shared documents on the go. I can get them from anywhere. If I'm only having to pay that little a month.
Yeah, it's obviously going to, I guess.
Not a lot.
No, not on the grand scheme of things. It depends how it all works. But anyway, the subscription model seems to be the way that things are going to go, especially because we're going to go more web-based. So I think we'll see more and more. I mean, things like Flickr, we pay a yearly...
No, and I think for a small firm, instead of setting up your own servers, you know, to go and securely set up something like this, you know, you could set it up in a day and have your company up and running.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I'm hosting. Yep. Yeah. So moving on. This is awful. The man probably behind much of Microsoft's cloud offerings and probably things like, you know, Microsoft or MS Office 365, Ray Ozzie, has resigned this week. Was it Sunday, Monday? It came out. I didn't know too much about him until he actually joined Microsoft, but he's very well respected with, you know, in the kind of IT and computer industry. And he seemed to be the one driving forward much of their cloud effort, and he kind of took over from Bill Gates, that kind of evangelisty type role and trying to drive the company forward.
He probably one of their few remaining visionaries.
Well, that's how it appears, because you don't really hear much else from Microsoft.
No.
Anyway, he's resigning and he's not being replaced.
So we're just left with Ballmer.
Yeah. And the strange thing is, he's actually going to go, and before he resigns, he's going to go and look at, internally look at the kind of entertainment products Microsoft are doing, spend some time there and then resign, which isn't really his background, which just seems odd. The whole thing just seems odd.
Well, I've said, we've been talking about it over the last few months almost, that yeah, there's Microsoft does seem like a weird husk at the moment. It's almost like Ballmer's a Rottweiler with no owner directing, where to go and put that.
Did you ever watch, remember there was that All Things D conference? You know, usually they get Ballmer's on every year, and it was a couple of years ago they had Gates and Jobs in the same conference and that kind of thing. And this year they had Ballmer on, but also had Ray Ozzie sitting beside, so they were both getting interviewed at the same time. And they were asked the same question, and both their answers were totally different.
Yeah, so
on a number of occasions. Just sat there and thought,
this is
what?
One company, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was Ballmer saying one thing, and then Ray, what do you think of that? And he'd give a completely different answer. And then Ballmer would just try and spin it out with
said black and I said red, but of course we meant sort of blacky red.
And you're just sitting there looking at it thinking, what?
Yeah.
And it just felt quite uncomfortable.
Sorry, I've just whacked my mic.
No, that's okay. There's not much else that could go wrong tonight, to be honest. I'm waiting for the power cut. Before we go on to games and picks and stuff, I just wanted to mention quickly the Boxy Box.
Oh, yeah.
Which we've loads of time have mentioned it. It's now finally got a release date, November 12th in the UK for £200.
So not far away.
3 weeks today.
And double the price of a Apple TV, but potentially a lot more useful.
Yes. Well, certainly you should be able to view any content you want. You shouldn't have the same. You won't have the same restrictions with codecs, etc., that you do with Apple TV.
No, I mean, from all intents, again, I've read some UK reviews of the Apple TV, and they pretty much say it's great interface. There's nothing in it.
No, and I've also, I've heard the great interface, and some people have been scathing of it, but I think they are being very, very picky.
Yeah, but
almost trying to find holes.
But there's no point having this whole thing if there's no content for UK. It's just pointless.
Yes. No, absolutely. And just to quote Brian, just seen a Boxy Box in the flesh. Very tidy little package. I'm sure he was still talking about the Boxy Box when he said that tweet. So I still think that there's a small place in my heart for the Boxy Box.
I love it. I think it's great.
Fable 3.
All right, so I'm looking forward to Fable 3. I'm definitely a Fable player.
That's out about the next, is it next month?
I think it's next Friday.
Oh, right. Okay, that's quicker than I thought.
Yeah. A week today, I think. And basically, it's going to be another Epic game, I'm sure. But they have taken the decision to, in your box, give you a redemption card to get some exclusive, what they're calling exclusive content. Now the reason I want to bring this up is that we've seen this a couple of times now we've heard games manufacturers and publishers effectively saying that they don't like the second-hand game market because they don't see anything from it. So EA recently released released the idea that you can only play your game online if you've got a code, and then you only get one code in the box when it gets sold. So someone has to pay sort of tenner to get their code so they can play it if they buy it secondhand. And now Fable are kind of doing a thing where to get all the content of the game, you have to have the new game because that's the only way you have these redemption cards. Now, in this particular circumstance, I don't think it's too much different from other things we've seen, in that it's not really essential to the game to have these extras. They're just little nice-to-haves or little, extras here and there. I just think it's more the trend.
Oh, it's definitely going that way. It's definitely going that way.
Yeah.
If EA can get away with it this year, and more people will just join it next year.
Yeah. When you're buying a second-hand game, you won't just be buying the disc. You'll have to buy additions to get it up and running, say, online or whatever.
And it has been talk, especially around Call of Duty, because it's just such a big behemoth now, that next year there will be some... You know, if you want to play online, you might have to pay certain bits and pieces extra, which have been denied.
They always are until they're done, aren't they?
Exactly. exactly. But it is the way they're going. The second-hand market, I think they're just trying to squeeze the money there.
Yep.
And that's our stories. And now on to picks. Now, I don't have a pick. The only thing I will say is, used Yelp all this week to find restaurants when I was in London, and it worked fantastically well. So
so you were saying that you found four restaurants, was it, that weren't on the high street, effectively?
We weren't on the high street. If we were walking by them, we wouldn't. In fact, one of them looked quite dodgy, and but the food was superb. And it's just one of these things. A lot of the places you looked at looked fantastic, and were getting really quite poor ratings. So, and I guess the only thing we did make sure was we always chose a place that had more than 10 ratings, because it's, if you know three or four people, you can get 5-star ratings dead easy.
Yeah, because the restaurant owner can say, "Oh, go on Yelp."
Exactly. But if you've had 60 reviews, that tends to be a bit more honest. So yeah, it worked really well for us. So a big thumbs up to Yelp. It's not helped my weight. I'm dreading standing on my scales tomorrow morning. Because there's no way I've not put on weight.
Funnily enough, my pick starts out with my scales.
So what is your pick then, Chris?
Well, so I my scales, their battery ran out. I think it's the batteries run out. It's either I got on them and then they just broke. So I was just happened to be looking on Amazon for some batteries for my scales, which are obviously these tiny little non-standard batteries. And I sneezed and accidentally clicked on a Kindle. I accidentally bought a Kindle. I didn't accidentally buy it at all. It was just, I'm clearly too bored or something. It's clearly in the right range that I was on the site. I thought, quite fancy that. And next thing I know, I've ordered it. And 2 days later, it's here. So I am now the owner of a Kindle 3G.
Fantastic.
Yes. It's a great little piece, a kit.
So that's what I was going to say. First impressions. So out of the box, how did it feel?
So it's what kind of size is it? It's probably about the size of a small softback book.
Yep.
It's got the weight probably of about a small softback book, so that kind of weight. But it feels nice and solid. The screen on it is incredible. Now, it's kind of the first thing that really hits you, because you get so used to seeing screens that have, a viewing angle. You know, when you tilt them, it's, you get a degraded view. But because it's not the same technology, it's amazing how, your eyes sort of think it's just paper, effectively. And it does a very good job at grayscale. I mean, I'm quite impressed with how it deals with sort of grayscales and stuff. I thought it was just going to be a black and white screen, but that's actually pretty subtle. It's quick, slick. It comes ready to go. So it even comes synced up with the Amazon account that you use to buy it. So you can go and buy stuff straight away. The store's all nice and neat and tidy and easy to get at your books. Things I didn't even know about it before I got it. It has got a rudimentary web browser on it. So you can go and browse the net, although it's very basic and wouldn't really be of any use on any normal site, I wouldn't have thought. Although it does work. You can play MP3 songs on. I didn't realize you could do that. It also has, so it has embedded speakers, and it can read out stories if you want it to, in a kind of computery type voice. My downsides on it, the keyboard's very small. And I think it's not unusable, and it's not a killer. It looks like it could have been done with just being a little bit bigger.
But how often will you actually use it?
Well, you have to use it if you're searching around, or if you do want to type in comments, or if you are doing a little bit of browsing or searching the store, you do have to use it.
If you've bought like your 5 or 6 books,
if you're just using it as a browsing device, a reading device, absolutely. You just use the forward and back buttons. It can change all its from portrait to landscape, whatever you want. It's an impressive kit, bit of kit, and there's plenty of free stuff out there, as I've figured out since. I don't want to buy books. Ridiculous. So all the classics, basically, which I've never read, are pretty much all free, or you can certainly find a lot of them for free. But even I wouldn't say that the very latest releases, but the sort of, you know, off of the main bestseller releases, there, you know, you can buy books for £2, so you can't really moan at that.
The price of ebooks, some of them are really good. Other ones are dearer. I mean, they're dearer than buying the book in the shops.
I would never do, therefore, yeah. You know. But I think they will find their home and their level once people realise that. I mean, it's been the biggest selling item on Amazon since it got released. I think we've mentioned that previously.
Yeah.
More than any other product, the Kindle's been sold. Biggest drawback as far from from where I'm sat is the fact that it is DRM'd and it doesn't support EPUB.
And I guess the only fear is, like, if you buy 100 books,
they're stuck on your Kindle.
And it's a bit like me with my couple hundred apps now on the iOS devices.
Yeah.
You know, for me to move now, there is a cost.
I mean, they have released the Kindle apps on plenty of other platforms, which is a saving grace almost, because you can get the Kindle, even though it's DRM'd, at least it's not stuck to the one platform.
So you can get it on your PC, Mac, Android, iOS, whatever.
Yeah, wherever you want. They have pretty much released it. It's an amazing. It's such a focused bit of kit, but it does it very well.
And it's funny your opinion, and you've bought it, but your opinion. I've not bought one, but my boss at work had one, and I got to play with it for 10-15 minutes. And your initial impression is almost exactly mirror mine's. I was so impressed with it.
And so for the price, you could expect it to be sort of cheaply made and wobbly and feel, you know.
Oh, it's total contrast to the bit of kit that came out initially.
Yeah, which I never actually got to touch, but, you know.
It looked a piece of turd. And then whereas this actually looks really nice. And the bit that fooled me was the e-ink. It looks, you're looking at it thinking, it is like a stuck-on picture. And then you're like, oh, that is it.
Because obviously it doesn't use power to actually display. So whenever a really nice feature is when you turn it off, it actually puts up an image of something, whether it be a book, an author, or a scene from something, and it puts it on there, and it stays there because it doesn't take any power for it to be there.
Another thing for me is and the iPad in the hand can feel heavy after a length of time. You know, you do. I on the plane today, I was moving it around and I was shuffling it around. Not a lot. I mean, I'm not sitting there going, "Oh, woe is me, and I can't carry this." It's just you feel it just, you know, dragging your hand a bit. Whereas you don't feel that with the Kindle at all.
You could hold that for hours. You wouldn't notice you're carrying it.
But you could hold that in your hand for hours and just read.
Yep.
Excellent.
I'll let you know in a few months whether I actually bothered reading anything on it.
And that's it's the same for me. I mean, I'm not a reader. I've bought a couple of books. I'm kind of halfway through one. What I read a lot of is, Google Reader, Instapaper. And that kind of thing. That's where I'm reading lots of content.
You can get periodicals and magazines and newspapers and stuff on it. Yep. So there's those options as well.
I think Instapaper works on it as well. If you go and look up Instapaper, because I'm starting to now save a lot of long form articles into Instapaper, and it's just a nicer environment to read in.
Yep.
And I just catch up on those on the plane or on the toilet or places where I need to waste some time.
Indeedy.
Fantastic pick. I actually think that is a really good one, and I think it's cheap, 100 quid. Oh, did you get 3G?
Yes, so I got 3 quid. It's 40 quid extra to get the 3G, basically.
Uh-huh.
Or is it 50 quid? It's either 40 or 50 quid extra. But obviously that's a lifetime of 3G access, so I can actually access the web wherever I am if I need to. I'm not going to do it on that device, but so nevertheless.
You did get it, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. 3G. So 40 quid for a lifetime 3G access.
No, I totally agree. If I was buying one, I'd go 3G. If I was buying one for my mum, she'd get the Wi-Fi one. Yeah. Just because I know she would never use that, whereas I have the potential I might.
They seem to be, they've got a section called Experimental, which is where the web browser lives. So it kind of shows that they are going to be playing with things. They've got a mic on board that they're not using at all at the moment. So there's going to be things going forward that they're going to enhance it with, I'm sure.
Mm. Good. Excellent. Thanks for that. And hopefully my picks will pick up again next week. That's us for this week. If you want to know more, our website is digitalitebox.com, and you can email us at info@digitalitebox.com, and we're on Twitter and Skype as Digital Outbox. Spot the trend. Also, reviews, get in that blooming iTunes site and give us a review.
Yes, please.
Please. There might even be like cake involved. I've got no idea how that would work.
We'll eat the cake if you do the reviews.
Yeah, I ate a lot of cake this week. It's fantastic. Where can we find out more about you, Chris?
Twitter as Cheesy UK, although don't expect to find out too much.
Twitter is your new blog. I'm on Twitter as Shweeper, and my blog is eend.net, which is going barren as well. But that will be resolved very soon. Thanks for listening. And next time, we'll be a bit more awake. Cheers.
See you later. See, now I seem to be, every single time I say goodbye, I put two words into one. So that one was see you then, which meant to be see you later then. Maybe I should just start a new language.
Exactly. Maybe this is it.
That.